better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
And we are live. Welcome to episode 3,560 of the Survival Podcast. And I believe for Bitcoin Breakouts, this is episode 55. And I just verified that, and it is. This episode came about kind of some of the best episodes happened this way. Though I don't like it when it happens. My guest, who I booked two freaking months ago, bailed on me on Monday because they have other initiatives. So they've been told they will not be welcome back to the show. And I'm like, what the hell do I do? And then Dr. Ken Berry is reaching out to me for information. That's kind of a reverse flow of things, unless it involves growing stuff. But it's because he recently kind of got big into Bitcoin and Bitcoin tech like Noster. And so we're going back and forth in text. And if you've ever tried to explain Bitcoin to someone that's new to the subject, you know, it can be hard, and text is not great for it. Like, here's an article, go read it. They don't read it. They just ask you another question. And I was like, I should have a phone call with him and walk him through some of this. I'm like, wait a minute, this seems like an opportunity. I said, hey, why don't we bring you on with me? You ask me the questions, I'll explain them to you, and that way I don't think I'm explaining something that people understand, because when I say something, because I've been doing this for like 9 years, that I know what I'm saying, and people don't know, you'll tell me that I'm talking to up here and bring it down. So I thought it'd be great. So we'll have Ken in just a minute, and he'll be grilling me on Bitcoin, probably some Noster stuff too. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about Lightning. I don't know, because it's all on Ken. However, before we do that, I want to take care of our sponsors of the day. And since this is a Bitcoin Day episode, I thought it'd be a good idea to bring on some tech stuff for you. And today's sponsor of the day, number one today, is Above Phone. Did you know that not only is like your carrier, AT&T, T-Mobile, whoever, spying on you and stealing information and sharing it with the government and all that, but so is all the people that make the apps, and so is the people that make the phone. What if you can make that all go away? You can at Above Phone. What you'll get is it's the same kind of phone that most people that are, you know, using an Android phone are using as far as the body itself, but it's been the operating system's been yanked out of it. It's been replaced with graphene, and there's another option too if you prefer it. And this will, what this will do is change everything. You will stop being tracked by the carrier and having all your data shared with the government and with corporations who are buying it. You'll have your own private app store where all the stuff that you want to do, you'll be able to do, but you'll have apps that do not spy on you, do not collect your information. And if you do have to use an app that's like only in the Google Play Store and you need that one app or some group of apps, you put them in a little jail. And they only do what they do when you let them out of jail. Otherwise, they stay in jail and they mind their own damn business the way they should in the first place. That's what you can get at Above Phone. And if you're an MSB member, you will get $75 off the purchase of any phone at AbovePhone.com, and you can take back your technology. Next up today is Start 9. Now, look, we're talking about Bitcoin today. You want to run a Bitcoin node? You want a Start 9 server. You want to run a Lightning node? You want a Start 9 server. You want to run a Noster relay? You want a Start 9 server? You want to run end-to-end encrypted messaging that even the government can't figure the hell out, let alone even see in the first place? You want a Start 9 server, and you want to do anything of like 70 other things? You want a Start 9 server. This is too complicated. I'm like Ken Berry. I'm a boomer. I can't figure it out. Can you install apps on your phone and use them? Yes, then you can use a Start 9 server. It really is that easy. Check them out, and they'll give you 9% off if you are an MSB member as well. With that, I want to bring Dr. Ken Berry, expert in all things but not in Bitcoin, to take me to task and say, can I help a relatively, not brand new, but relatively new person to the world of Bitcoin out? So, Ken, I'm turning it over to you, man. We can talk about whatever you want to today, as long as it's Bitcoin or Noster or somehow tech-related.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks, Jack, for having me. I've actually been piddling, as my grandfather would say, with Bitcoin for several years, probably 2 or 3 years. I've had a little bit. Remember, I was at your place a few years back, and you were recommending that specific wallet, and so I bought some Bitcoin and put in that wallet.
Okay.
Which, since I've forgotten the name of the wallet, definitely forgotten my words, and it wasn't much. So it's like, okay, that's just, you pay stupid tax, right?
That's a stupid tax.
Yeah, so that's stupid tax on my part. To be fair, it's not lost forever. It's just misplaced. So one day I'll find it and then it'll be fine, but you know, whatever. So, you turned me on to Nostr recently, because I keep really liking the idea of a decentralized, social media.
Sure.
So that you're kind of in charge of your content. You carry your followers with you. So, you know, say that Twitter says, oh, you've talked about fat doctors one too many times, you're banned. Well, then I've got to go to a new platform and I've got to build up my followers again. Mm-hmm. Right. Whereas if I'm on Nostr, the Jack taught me this. I didn't know this, that I just log on a different way and I've got all my followers still right there with me. And so it effectively makes you unbannable. And currently, I'm not having any problem with censorship or anything on any of the social media platforms currently. But as we all know, if you're being too loud and persistent with common sense, very often that'll get you banned. Just depending on what changes in the societal climate, you could go from being a very valuable member of society to being banned. Yep. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go ahead and branch out into that. And so then on Nostr, people were sending me zaps when I would post something. And I'm like, okay, is that good or bad? I don't know. Is that like a demerit or is that a good thing? Well, it turns out zaps are Satoshis.
Yeah.
And so what does it take, 100 million Satoshis to make one Bitcoin? Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, I got to tell everybody this. So Ken gets – right after he gets on Nostr, he's all excited because he got like 4,000 sats in a day or something. He's like, they're like 22 cents a Satoshi, right? I'm like, no, it's like 20 of them to make a penny.
I looked it up on some app, and it's like one Satoshi's 22 cents. I'm like, dang. Surely not. But so I asked Jack and he's like, no, moron, that's not correct. Yeah. And so then I'm like, okay, well, I need somewhere to put my sats, right? My Satoshis. And so I've been on Coinbase for a couple of years. And anytime Bitcoin, I own some Bitcoin and some Ethereum because they seem like the two best bets at the time when I started Coinbase. And every time the price would really dip, I'd buy $50, $100, something just to, you know, be building up some Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And so then I piddled around and figured out how I could transfer my Satoshis from Nostr over to Coinbase. And then I got to thinking, well, I wonder if Coinbase is that like really private, really secure? And so then I asked that question on Nostr. And so let me make that one of my first questions, because Coinbase makes it super easy to buy cryptocurrency, right? You just sign. It's just like signing into a bank account. And so then you can link your credit card or link your bank account, and then you can buy Bitcoin. You can buy Ethereum. You can buy any of the other cryptocurrencies, and they keep them for you. They kind of, you know, they are the custodian. Well, my first question to Jack is, for somebody just getting started, they've heard enough. They're like, okay, I guess Bitcoin's not going away. I guess Bitcoin's important, might get much more important in the future. What about Coinbase and other places like that? Is that a good place to buy Bitcoin? Is that a good place to store, keep your Bitcoin or not?
Those are two different questions, and I have two totally different answers. So buying Bitcoin on Coinbase, I have no problem with. And I still recommend a lot of people start there, even though it's not my most positive recommendation for buying Bitcoin. I believe sites or exchanges like Strike and Swan, which are exclusively Bitcoin only, have lower fees and have much better customer service, is where most people would probably be best off. But still, for a lot of people, man, if Coinbase is what it takes you to get off zero, I'm okay with it, and I'll tell you why. And you know this. When you log into Coinbase, it looks an awful lot like PayPal.
Yep.
Right? It looks a lot, and most people know how to use PayPal. And if you know how to use PayPal, you can use Coinbase no problem. And if you're going to buy Bitcoin for dollars on an exchange, you're going to do KYC, which is know your customer. It means you're going to give them your ID and a bank account number or, you know, something like that. And they're going to verify you are who you say you are. And even the very best companies available to U.S. people today, unless you're using some backdoor crap with a VPN and all, they're going to require that because they're required to by law. So people get all upset about like the privacy issue. If you're buying on an exchange and you KYC'd in, then you probably can be linked to the addresses that that Bitcoin goes to anyway. So we can throw that out. The problem I have with Coinbase today is if you have a problem talking to somebody there, you're going to get better results calling your senator than you are calling Coinbase customer service, which for a public company that does the volume of business they do to not give a shit about customer service, that just sucks. But the other thing is the fees are high. So as you start getting your Bitcoin off of Coinbase, which I highly recommend, you're going to see how expensive it can be to do trades and conversions and things like that. Where they're fantastic, and it's why I recommend everybody probably should have a Coinbase account that you can use. If you link a bank account to them and you want to go from Bitcoin to cash, then you're in great shape because you're going to pay one trading fee when you sell your Bitcoin to cash. It'll be instant. They'll tell you to take it. The first time you do it, it might really take a week and a half. They're going to tell you it's going to take a week and a half to be in your bank account. But once you have cash on Coinbase and you say, put it in my bank account, and you've done it more than once, it'll be there in about 24 hours. So to have a valid off-ramp, even if you don't use it much, still recommend you have that account. And if you make a trade to cash and you put it in your bank account and you don't pay tax on it, they're going to get you. So don't worry about avoiding tax because you ain't going, right? Like that's – now, keeping it, no. No, because let's say Dr. Ken Berry pisses somebody off in the government. I mean, that could never happen, right? There's no way you'd ever piss our government off. Like, they're not in bed with the American Diabetes Association that you just created a competitor to or anything. Like, I had never. So let's say you upset somebody, or let's say they decide to look at you. Let's say they say Dr. Berry burned down his own house, which we know didn't happen, but somebody claimed that happened at one time. All kinds of things can happen. The government says, we want to put a freeze on Dr. Berry's assets. Well, you don't want that. I don't want that. Once you get your Bitcoin into your possession, we call it self-custody. If the government says, we know you have Bitcoin, you say, well, that's nice. Well, we want it or we want to freeze it. Go ahead. Good luck. Pick the, because the ability to actually hack somebody's Bitcoin, not their exchange account, their actual Bitcoin, is akin to trying to pick the right atom out of the known universe. That's just the math behind picking the right 12 words. So I have no problem with the fact that you've bought on Coinbase. What I'm telling you to do is get your money off Coinbase. And this time, make sure you document well whatever wallet you use and start transferring. And what I would tell you to do, very simple process, set up a wallet. Let's say you use Exodus. I recommend it because they have good customer service. And I don't want to be your customer service person. I'm talking to everybody now, right? Go on Coinbase and send yourself $100. When it shows up, then you're like, okay, I know it worked. Now go to a different device, download whatever wallet, Exodus, Electrum, Coinami, I don't care. Download the same wallet, stick your seed phrase in, and restore a wallet. And you'll see that same balance appear over on this completely different device. Then you know you've got it right. You feel safe, and now you can move the rest of the money off. That'll put you in what I call a bronze standard of self-custody, right? Bronze metal standard. That means that you completely control your stuff. The only problem is, let's say it's on your phone. Somebody gets your phone. And they're able to get into your phone and unlock your wallet, they can send that money to themselves. So that's the weakness you're at there. But people that are up to a few $1,000, you're probably in pretty good shape, and maybe you don't put it on your phone. Maybe you just keep it at your computer at home. That means somebody's to break in your house, crack your password, crack your wallet password, and then I think you're probably all right and pretty secure on a few grand there.
Gotcha. And so then buying it on Coinbase, not that big a deal. You're going to pay some probably higher fees for the convenience, but yep, that's probably fine. But then you wouldn't want to store a significant amount there for the long term.
No, because it could be seized. It could be locked up. And if you have a problem, they're not going to help you anyway. So if you want to store on an exchange, just so that you do have that person to help you, I would look at something more like Swan. Strike I like for small amounts. They have a lightning feature. That's really great and all. But Swan has amazing customer service. If you have a problem, they're going to fix it for you. You can talk to the president of Swan on freaking X by @shouting Corey Klipstein, and he'll freaking answer you. That's kind of crazy for the size of that company right now.
And so Strike would be is a wallet.
Middle ground. super cheap, works perfectly if you get approved, because when they talk to your bank account, the automation, if it doesn't work, you're fucked. They won't talk to you. They won't fix it. Like, there's no back door. They need to work on their customer service, but their trading fees and their transfer fees are near zero. So small amounts, things like that, and they make it really easy. Like, if they approve you, one of the really nice things, and you can do this with Swan too, you, if you have a J-O-B, you can go into your HR, Karen, and ask her for a direct deposit slip and fill it out, and not your whole check. You could say, I want 10% of my check every month or every week or whatever pay period to go straight into Strike and buy Bitcoin. It'll happen automatically. So they have a lot of cool features. They're just, they're kind of weak on customer service as well. And that's too bad, because I really love Jack Mahlers, who's the founder of the company. And I will say this just to be careful. I'm basing my opinion on, you know, interacting with them a year ago. So they may have gotten better, but I haven't heard anything that would indicate that.
So you mentioned Strike, and yeah, I'm assuming that's a wallet.
It's a wallet and an exchange. So most exchanges have apps that can act as wallets. So I wouldn't even say it's, yeah, it is a wallet. It has a wallet integrated into the app. The beautiful thing about Strike is you can send dollars and have Bitcoin show up. So you can have dollars deposited into your Strike account, or you can link to your bank account and transfer it over. You can hold USD. And if you're the kind of person that likes to spend Bitcoin because you want to help Bitcoin, I think that's great. I think you're creating a tax nightmare for yourself, and you're not hodling, right? You're spending. And okay, great. So the way you create no tax event for yourself is you hold USD in that spending account, and that be that small amount I'm okay with on an exchange. And then you go to a place and it says, we take Bitcoin. And if they want Bitcoin in the form of Lightning or on chain, boop, and done. And it magically changes during the transaction, which also means if you're depositing USD in your Strike account and you want Bitcoin in self-custody, you can send it to your own address that way. And you don't have really a trading fee because you never traded. And you also have, like, you're not Jason Bourne or anything, right? But now you have some obfuscation because you're not necessarily the person on the other end of that transaction. You see what I'm saying? So it's a little bit of obfuscation in who's actually holding the Bitcoin, and you never actually bought Bitcoin, even though you did.
Now, I've got multiple questions about that, but I think first we need to pull back to the 10,000-foot level.
Okay.
And ask a question that my wife, Nisha, keeps asking me, because the price of Bitcoin, first of all, just the saying the price of Bitcoin, that makes it sound like it's not money. That makes it sound like it's a commodity. And then also the fact that the price is crazy volatile. Like, it can be, it was 55,000 just a few days ago. Then it was 60. Now it's 59. That doesn't feel like currency to me. And I know that people trade on currencies. I know currencies' values fluctuate, but not like that. So her question to me a million times, and so I'm going to ask you so I can have an answer, is when does Bitcoin stop being this crazy volatile commodity and start being actually money that people will use and spend?
Sure. So first of all, I think if you're going to spend money in the next few months, you probably shouldn't convert it into Bitcoin because volatility is there. But second, I would point out that, like, Bitcoin has matured to such a level and reached such a value that what we see is huge volatility. It's a $2,000 swing. Well, if you were in Bitcoin when it was like $9,000 and you got a $2,000 swing down to $7,000, that hurt, right? That hurt. That was a significant percentage. A lot of these big swings we see now, really in a percentage level, aren't that big. I mean, I know you're not big into stock trading or anything, but I'm sure you remember back in the day, let's say the 90s, if the Dow Jones went down 300 points in a day, people were jumping out of freaking windows. 300 points today is nothing, because the higher the number, the lower the percentage. So some of that volatility, not all of it, some of that volatility is a little bit overstated in our heads.
Right.
And I would say, like, this is a big problem you get with people getting into Bitcoin. So they buy like $500. To kind of put it in perspective, they buy $500 of Bitcoin. Bitcoin's at like $40,000, and it goes to $42,000, and they're acting like they're a gazillionaire. And it goes to $38,000, and they're acting like their kids died, right? Like, it's not that big a deal. And it's always people, little bits of it, that react the craziest about it. It's long-term money. And long-term, even if we take out the first couple years, you're looking about a compounded rate of around 100% per annum. If we come halfway through its life, if we go back to the beginning, it's more like 200%. So that volatility, that's what we say is a feature, not a bug. But that volatility also has been reducing. And if you go look at a graph of Bitcoin cycles, and it's a four-year cycle around what we call a halving, you'll see that if you kind of like contain the volatility in a sphere, every cycle, the size of that sphere shrinks. So one of the big things is people say, well, I missed the opportunity with Bitcoin. Bro, we are early. We are so early. We are internet in 1991 when the fools on Good Morning America going, what's that at sign? What is internet? Why does it say that? Like, that's how early we really are. And as more and more people adopt Bitcoin, the less major sell-offs and buy-ins will affect volatility. So volatility is shrinking, but we're a long way from where it completely kind of gets to more like a currency where you can have a couple hundred million flow in and out in an hour and not have a big movement. You're going to still have that for a while. But every time more of that Bitcoin is locked up permanently or locked up long-term, that volatility is capped and goes down. So that does mean that you're probably not going to have the kind of returns you could have had if you would have aped in 9 years ago. But what you have is a more secure and safe investment over the next 9 years than you had 9 years ago. It was a much bigger risk then than it is now, so the reward was higher. So we're seeing that come down. But, you know, I'm going to tell you that I think most people here today, if they follow your dietary advice and don't kill themselves, will see million-dollar Bitcoin in their lifetime.
Yeah, I've watched.
You can either have no volatility, you can have upside. It's up to you what you want, right?
Right, right. I've watched a few videos by Michael Saylor, and so he talks about, you know, million-dollar Bitcoin, $13 million Bitcoin in some cases, some people are talking about. And I guess as it increases in value and becomes more adopted, then the volatility just continues to decrease, mm-hmm. and it becomes more of a currency than it is looked at as a commodity. And so, but right now it feels like you're trading a stock or you're betting on a horse at the track.
And the
to
government
some people,
treats
and
I understand
long term that's not the case.
Yeah, the government treats it that way, right? It's considered a commodity. It is considered outside the stock market, which gives us some unique things we can do. Nobody likes capital gains taxes. Well, we only pay them when we sell it. That's kind of the good thing of holding a stock. I can have my stock go up 100x, and if I don't sell it, I don't pay any tax. I just have that equity sitting there whenever I want to take a
for
piece
now,
of it. I
anyway.
Only pay equity. I only pay tax on the piece that I sold. So if I have $1 million profit, but I take 100,000 out, and that 100,000, you know, the based on a basis was 10, I only pay tax on $90,000. I still have the rest of the money without. And Bitcoin works that way. The advantage it has over a stock for tax implications is it, unlike a security, it is not subject to what's known as the wash rule. As long as you didn't buy it in one of the ETFs, that would change if you did an ETF, because that's a public offered security, right? So what that means is if I'm holding Exxon stock right now and it tanks for some, like something happens, there's an oil spill or something and everybody freaks out and dumps it. If I sell it, I have to wait, I believe it's either 60 or 90 days I have to wait to buy the same stock back. So I can't sell it, cash in the loss on my taxes, and immediately buy it back and just reestablish my basis with Bitcoin and, frankly, all cryptocurrency I can. So when I buy Bitcoin each year, I kind of put it into a series of addresses so I know which is what. And if we have a big sell-off and a big drop, which we tend to in each cycle, I throw all of that on an exchange. I dump it all. I immediately buy it back, and then I record the capital loss for that tax year. This is not some shysterism. This is completely legal. This is the government's rules. It could get closed and changed with some regulations they're talking about doing. Until they do, you could literally screen capture video yourself doing this, right? Send it with your tax return. It's okay. So that's where that volatility, again, can be a feature, not a bug, if you're smart about it. And Hunter, who's probably right based on my experience with him, says wash rule's 30 days, and that's probably right. He locked up. Look at him. I thought he was thinking.
Gotcha. Now back to backlog.
You're there.
There we go. You're back. So I feel like wallets are misnamed. I feel like they should be called keychains, because I just learned yesterday that there's no Bitcoin in your wallet. There's no, that's not where you keep your Bitcoin. Your Bitcoin is always on the blockchain.
Correct.
What your wallet is just your, basically your key. So it really should be called a key ring, not a wallet. And that would help people understand that a little better. The keys are what help you unlock the blockchain to get access to your Bitcoin. So if we just go with Strike, which is not only a wallet, but they also have an exchange. So they're like Coinbase, but also with a wallet. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, Coinbase has its, you kind of have a wallet there too. It's just works a little bit differently. I think a way that people can think of it is, imagine you installed a Ring doorbell service on your house, and you have a camera sitting on your porch, and some guy is dicking around trying to pick the lock of your porch, and an alert goes off, and you pull up the picture and look at him.
Or the rooster is on your front porch
taking a dump like mine just was, right? And you pull it up, and you look, and you see that guy trying to get in your house, and you push a button where the thing goes off. You go, get the hell out of here before I shoot you, and he runs away. Was he in your phone?
Right.
He wasn't in there. You just accessed the camera from the phone or from your computer or whatever. That's how a crypto wallet works. But all you're doing is signing and confirming transactions and writing transactions into the blockchain. And we're stuck with the word wallet. It will never go away. But it does make people think the Bitcoin's in there. Every Bitcoin, every fraction of Bitcoin that's sitting on address, that address is controlled. Your address is your public key. Like, people have to know what that is or they can't send money to it, right? So if you want money, it's like giving them your bank account. Then there's a private key, a really long string, alphanumeric. And again, there's so many combinations for every private key that it's like all the atoms in the universe. And I'm not exaggerating. It's almost the estimate of all the atoms in the universe for possibilities. Those two have to go together for Bitcoin to move off that address. Anybody can send money to an address. You want to move it off. You want to make a change of that address. You need both sides. All that wallet does is hold all the keys that go with all the public addresses in a way that makes it easy for you to interact with it. If it's a software wallet, that's what it does. That means that it's on your phone, and whenever your phone's connected to the internet, people could conceivably try to hack into your phone and gain access to it, but it's very difficult anyway. If it's on a hardware wallet, all that means is you have something like this is a Trezor hardware wallet right here, and there's no way to hack this at all or try to even attempt to hack it through the air. Like, the ether will not get you there until I plug it in, and then it's interfacing with my device. And as soon as I unplug it, that interfacing ceases. When you're with Strike or Coinbase, the security risk there is, even if I got your phone, okay, now I got to get your password, and I got to get the password to your wallet. So if I'm a hacker and I got in remotely, unless you're worth a lot of money in Bitcoin and really dumb and sitting there with $2 million worth of Bitcoin on your phone, it's a lot of work for a small return. If I can hack Coinbase, now I'm gaining access to all their customers. If I can hack, and that's one of the reasons I don't like you holding on an exchange. So they're all wallets, but when you're on an exchange, with a few exceptions, you don't really have addresses. You have like a deposit address, but it's like a bank. It's shared. And then when you take it off and you move it to your address, that's when you really own it. Think of it just like a bank. Is it your money? Well, they say it's your money. They probably will give it to you when you ask for it, but they might not. And one of the real concerns we have, and we're not sure about any exchange, the one we probably have the least faith in is Coinbase. Gemini has some concerns too. That do they really have all the Bitcoin they've sold? I'm much more comfortable that BlackRock has all the Bitcoin in its ETF, it says, because it's got to be audited and reviewed. And we know the public address is associated with the ETF, so we can audit it ourselves. Ask Coinbase for all their addresses for the Bitcoin they're holding for retail customers, not including how they're acting as custodians for larger institutions. They won't give you that information, so we don't really know. They could be, I'm not saying they are, they could be selling you Bitcoin they don't have.
So it could be almost like a fractional reserve Bitcoin situation where you think you've got $100,000 in the vault, but that's been loaned out. That's gone. There's $200 in the vault.
It could be. And maybe they don't, maybe it's not that bad, but maybe if everybody, like, remember, what was the Christmas movie with George? Wonderful Life. If everybody wanted all their Bitcoin at the same time, might they not be able to actually cover? And that's a concern. That's a concern that at some point, if everybody's like, if everybody did what we tell them to do right now, get off the exchange and don't hold anything on exchange, would all the exchanges be able to cover it? I think the odds of that are like 1,000 to 1 against it. Would Coinbase maybe? I don't know. They're public. They'd be really, I mean, they're really risking it if they're doing that, especially with like a major currency like Bitcoin. But it could happen.
Gotcha. Now, next question is the Lightning Network. Now, I've watched some videos, and I think I figured out that this is kind of a second layer of technology on top of the kind of the Bitcoin torrent, you might say. Because it's really inconvenient and expensive if you wanted to buy some coffee at a local coffee house to pay them out of your wallet, so to speak. And so you don't really want to do that because the fees might cost you more than the coffee. But if you're – so this second layer, this Lightning Network that's kind of layered on top of Bitcoin – is you can use that to pay for coffee, and it's the fee is very minimal, not a big deal. And so for people who actually want to use Bitcoin day to day, which I know you, I don't think you recommend doing that. I think you recommend stacking that shit up and spending, according to Gresham's law, you spend the bad money and save the good money.
Correct.
Is that Gresham's law? Yeah, I think that's Gresham's law.
Gresham's law is the good money will be pulled out of circulation, and that
is you hold the Bitcoin and you spend the fiat, and that way you've got the good stuff you held back. And so, but if I wanted to, just like on Nostr, if I wanted to zap somebody, I'm assuming that zap that comes out of a kind of a Lightning Network that's within the Primal, which is what I use to access Nostr. Is that right?
Correct. And so, let me try to explain Lightning the way that I explained Nostr, and I think it'll make sense. What you said is true. So Bitcoin runs on what's called a blockchain, and it takes about 10 minutes per block. So about 10 minutes, your transaction will go into a block. Depending on when it entered the block, it'll be about 10 minutes before it's done. So it's that's slow, at least the way we think of it, because when we go to the store and swipe a credit card, it's like instant, right? A card approved, go on your way. What you don't know is it's actually 72 hours before that merchant has the freaking money. You sell stuff online, so you know how merchant accounts work. There's final settlement is not instantaneous. We're Bitcoin 10 minutes to this. But there's a fight, right? So make it secure. It's not fast and easy. It's hard and expensive. There's a real cost to money. So there's a real cost to Bitcoin being created, and there's a real cost to it moving and transactions being verified through what we call mining. And that's why it seems expensive. Now, is it expensive? If you're buying something for $250, it is not expensive. If you're buying something for $2.50, like you said, the fee might be more than the cost. So we don't want to do that. So we need like a light version of Bitcoin. So we move some of the Bitcoin off chain to what we'd call like a layer two or a side chain type situation. And I don't really want to get into how that works because that could be a whole podcast. In fact, I have whole podcast episodes just on how it works. But think of it like this. Lightning is a protocol, like email is a protocol. And you might use Gmail because you're a boomer, and I might use Outlook because I'm also sort of like we're Gen X boomers, right? Like we're older Xers, right? So I like Outlook because I came up with it because in the 90s when I worked in the office, everybody used Outlook. Now, I can email you on Gmail. You can email me on Outlook, and we'll send our stuff back and forth. But if you're sending me an expert counsel segment, think of that kind of like an on-chain transaction. There's this big old MP3 file. So I fire up Outlook in the morning, and I see all my transactions, which are emails, coming in, boom, 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 really fast. And all of a sudden, Ken D. Berry, right? And it's like, whoa. And it slows down, and then finally it downloads that whole MP3, and I go back to rapid. What if somebody made an email protocol specifically so that you had a way to separate emails that were text-based only? Well, those emails would be cheap and fast for resources. They would move much more quickly. It's not an exact analogy, but think of Lightning like that. We've moved Bitcoin off the chain, but we've secured it with it. There's always a corresponding on-chain transaction. Every Satoshi on Lightning has a corresponding, it's waiting to come back on chain. So it's very, very inexpensive. And how inexpensive? Well, I can zap you 2 sats, not even a penny. And I can afford to do it, and you actually get the 2 sats that I sent. If I send you 100 sats, it might cost me 1 sat to do that, which is a fraction of a penny to send you, like, right now, probably somewhere around 8 cents. Very cheap, very fast, very efficient. If you want to know more or you want more control, then you're going to want to, like, run what I was talking about when I talked about one of my sponsors today, a Lightning node, where you're running your own Lightning node. You put your own equity on it, because got to explain a little bit about how Lightning works. How do we keep each other honest? Jack is sending Ken money across Lightning, and it's going through Steve's node. Okay, how do we keep Steve honest? Steve actually has, as much as he can move through his node, he has equity placed on the network. So there's every dollar that goes across as a dollar securing it, let's say. And when that goes through, think of it like beads on an abacus, right? So it's going from my node through Steve's node to your node. When I send it, if I send you a dollar's worth of Bitcoin, an additional dollar that's mine will slide over to Steve's side. I still have it. I still control it. I can still take it off whenever I want to, but it's there. And eventually, when there's enough stacked on Steve's side, that secures transactions back into me, and I'll push it back out, and it secures transactions into me. Okay. So that's like knowing how email works. And my point with it is I want people to be confident that it works. It's not the banks taking over some bullshit like these people say. But you don't worry about how your email works. You don't understand IP protocol when you're using the internet or HTTPS protocol. You just use it. And that's how to think about Lightning. It's just a technology. The problem that people point out, and it is valid to a point, is if I'm running this node and you're using my custodial Lightning wallet, same thing we're back to with the exchanges, I could, in theory, rug everybody and try to steal all their Bitcoin. The thing is, I'm probably going to lose all my equity that I have staked to be able to do that. It's called justice. And so I'm going to damage my reputation. Nobody's going to want to do business with me. And I'm going to lose probably as much as I can steal. So it's complicated to do, but easy to use. And that's why I don't think most people should bother with a Lightning node.
Gotcha. Now, hold up your little wallet that you showed a second ago.
Wallet?
Yeah, hold that up. And so if somebody broke into your house tonight and took that, took it with them, what would happen?
So they would go plug it in, and it's been paired with Exodus, so it's not going to be real. If they really knew what they were doing, they could get around that fact and not figure out what wallet it's been paired with, and they could conceivably use it to steal all my Bitcoin. The first thing they would need to do, though, is figure out the PIN number that unlocks it. And that PIN number can be 8 digits, 4 digits, 6 digits, right? So you can't even just brute force it. And if you tried to brute force it, I believe it's you get 16 attempts, and it will permanently lock itself, and it won't work ever again. So they'd also have to get into it with a complex PIN and then know how to deal with the fact that they don't know what wallet is paired to. It could work completely on its own. It could work with Exodus's software. I'm sorry, with Trezor's software. It could work with a wallet like Electium. And so that kind of makes it another level of complexity. However, if somebody did steal that, I'd probably notice. And while they're trying to figure out how to get into it, only thing I got to do is just move it. Because I have the seed phrase that goes with that wallet. And with that seed phrase, I could restore it to another wallet. And by the time they cracked it, it's probably gone anyway. And it's only, this is some advice though on like physical security. This is here today because we're talking about this and I knew you'd ask. This normally lives inside a safe, a fireproof safe, right? So now they would have to break in my house, break in my safe, know what this is, steal it, and hack it before I had time to move it. So is it 1,000% secure? I don't know. Maybe 99.999. It's probably more secure than your bank account.
Yeah. Pretty secure. So let's just say you walked in tomorrow and you opened up your safe and that was gone. what would be your steps? How would you be like, oh shit, somebody's going to get my Bitcoin. Yeah. What would be your steps to use your seed phrases to secure that so that it would not be stealable?
I would do a wallet restore with the seed phrase. And as soon as I verified the money was still there, I would just move it to a new address that's not controlled by a wallet. That's the whole, there is no more. And I might temporarily like download any other software wallet that I'm comfortable with, because I need to do this expediently. I'd yep. push it into that wallet, and then maybe I'm in a software wallet for a week while I wait for my new Trezor to show up. Like, yeah. there's probably a way to like reflash that thing, wipe it out, and then in that scenario, these are like $150. If I'm risking a major portion of my stack, I'm not doing it. The other thing is I don't own one of these. I kind of have a limit where you get to a certain amount and I buy another one and I have Bitcoin on multiples of these. One thing to know about these hardware wallets, though, you can have some issues if they are not frequently updated with their newest software, especially if you're interfacing them with a software wallet like Exodus. So you need to pull them out every once in a while, plug them in, see if they need an update, hit refresh, do all of that, and that'll keep you from having any grief. Now, if something really goes wrong, you can always take your seed phrase. And then so you need to do some way of marking these so that wherever you store your seed phrases, you can pair them together. Like number one goes with seed phrase number four, maybe, like however you want to do that. I'll also say that it makes a lot of sense to have somebody that you trust that maybe doesn't have access to all of it. But like if you die or get a traumatic brain injury, they could and they would know where to go to find everything, and that person be intellectually capable of understanding what to do. So if your heirs do not, your heirs don't have that capacity, then you might want to have some trusted friend that they can go to. And maybe that trusted friend doesn't even know where the stuff is, but they could take it to that person for assistance in retrieving things. Because I look at it this way. If I die, what's on here goes to my son and don't nobody need to know about it. Right? It's him and the fence post and my dead body.
Right. And so that that would be another way to kind of protect wealth, because you could transfer that a week before you passed or a month before or a year before. And there, I guess that might bypass some taxes, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's again be realistic here, because I talk to my wife about this all the time. She'll find some TikToker talking about probate or tax consequences. I'm like, you know what? We're not worth $15 million, so that doesn't apply to us. So the vast majority of people out there is no inheritance tax for. It's somewhere north of $12 million. I don't remember exactly what it is. Per heir. So you're probably not going to have that anyway. But it might be that you just don't need the government to know what you have. Right. Yep. And so when you pass on, you should have an inheritance path for your Bitcoin. And this is one of the things I like about Swan and some other services, where they have something called multi-signature. And multi-signature is really useful if you are doing long-term inheritance planning and certain other things, or if you are making Bitcoin part of like your company treasury or your trust treasury, if you're that sophisticated. And it's a two of three thing. So I could give you one of the seed phrases if I had multi-sig, and you can do the square root of nothing with it, right? You can't do nothing. Square root of fuck all. But if you had two of them, you could move the Bitcoin. So when you set up with somebody like a Swan or other companies to do it, there's one that's really good at escaping right now. I feel bad not mentioning them. But if you set up multi-sig with them, they'll hold one, and you hold two. Now, you can move your money anytime you want to. You store those in two separate locations. The place you stored one of them blows up. You have one. You can prove your identity. You can go to them, and then they will give you the other one. So now you have control of your Bitcoin again. Or you die. Now you can give your heir one of the seed phrases, one of the three. And when you die, accompanied with your will and a death certificate, they will give it to them. So there's a lot of functionality that's being developed like that. And, you know, when you add something like a living trust to that, You know, you can create true generational wealth, and it could grow to the point where you do have to worry about taxes. But if you do it with a living trust, you won't. But that's beyond what most people listening today need to worry about at this moment.
Right. So if somebody were going to use Coinbase or Strike to buy Bitcoin, how much would you recommend? Like, okay, I'm buying $100 a month just to, every time the price seems to dip, I'm buying $100 or $50. At what point would you say, okay, that's enough. You need to get that off the exchange and get that into a wallet.
Real quick. Chartreuse said multisig unchained.com or Casa. And there's the two companies. Those are two great companies. Okay. So the amount, I think that's a little bit subjective to how much you have. Me, it's about $1,000. As I'm stacking on an exchange, it gets up to about $1,000. I move it off, you know, $500 though, I wouldn't fault anybody for it. If you're worried about $200, I don't know that you need to be buying Bitcoin. You know, and I'm not saying that you would just go out and pitch $200 in the street every week. I'm saying if you're really, really worried about $200, like if that's going to change your life, I don't know if you are for long-term risk assets yet, right? So it's $500 to $1,000. But there's another thing that brings up. I'm really glad you asked that. Back in the day, that answer was $100 because it was very cheap to move $100 back then. And I also used to give advice that I had to change over the years as transactions have gotten more expensive, as Bitcoin has gotten more expensive. Everything is managed by what we call UTXOs, which in other words, just think of that as an address. And when you make a transaction and you have like $10 in this address, $5 in this address, $15 in this address, and $100 in this address, and you need to pull from all of them to equal the transaction that you're doing, it's more expensive because you're pulling out of more addresses. There's more complexity to the transaction. So we used to say every transaction, create a new address, and your wallet will do that for you. Well, then this expense issue came and we started talking about consolidating UTXOs, really fancy sounding thing for move a lot of your Bitcoin onto singular addresses. The risk with that is if you do too much of it, you can give away too much information. Let's say that you sold Dr. Barry's electrolyte salts, right, on a website for Bitcoin only. And so you made a lot on Bitcoin. And so I do a transaction with you. I buy $50 worth of your electrolyte salts or, you know, your carnivore guide or whatever it is. And then I'm like, I wonder how much Bitcoin Ken has. And so I take that address and I throw it in a block explorer and it says $2.9 million. Well, Ken, you just might wake up in the morning with a gun in your mouth. Right? And a pad in your hand telling you to write down your seed phrase and we'll not pull the trigger if it works. Right? You're giving away too much. But even like if it's not that drastic, now you're telling your competitors what you sell. I could just look at your wallet, see all your transactions, and say, well, what item does he sell for $49.99? Well, that's his number one. See what I'm saying? There's all kinds of information you're giving away. So now I like to keep UTXOs based on U.S. dollar value of around $1,000 to $2,000, $2,500. So as I'm withdrawing to an address, I'll watch that UTXO, that address stack, and when it gets into that range, then I'll generate a new address. And that is, you still are giving away some, but you're not giving away all. Does that make sense? You're not giving away all that information, and you're not signifying to anybody that sent money to that address, hey, this fucker has like $25 million. Because people have killed people for $400. What Country Boy Can Survive, what it was like for $29, my friend lost his life, right? That shit happened. So if you're worth a couple $1,000,000 and you have a number out, this is one of many reasons I hate Ethereum, by the way. Okay. Ethereum does not have an address. They literally call that string of numbers an account. And there's a reason. When you open your wallet and say, I want to receive Ethereum, it will give you over and over and over that same number. And so at one time, I bought an awful lot of Ethereum, and somebody sent me a transaction, and I clicked a button to see how much money they had. Didn't realize I was clicking on my own address, and I went, holy shit, what kind of dumbass tells the world he has? Oh, wait a minute, that looks like a very familiar number. And I realized I was advertising to the world my entire holdings in Ethereum, which was a significant, I don't want to say exactly what, but it was a lot of money, because I bought Ethereum when it was 98 cents. Okay, so you feel me right there that this was like information I didn't want to give away. And so try to minimize your fees of your transfers out. And one of the best things you can do for that, transfer your money on Sunday morning. Transfer your money when commerce is low, and you're going to end up with lower fees in general. And Coinbase will dick you hard with their fees, but their transfer fees are actually really low because they're doing batch transactions. They're not coming from 9 UTXOs. They're coming from 1 and paying out to 12.
Gotcha. What else would a newcomer need to know? What have we not talked about that's super important?
Don't talk about what you're doing. Don't advertise. I mean, all these people with Bitcoin shirts and keychains and bumper stickers and all, I don't think that's the wisest thing. People say, well, he's there to talk. Well, I'm a podcaster. I have to take risks to teach people. So I would, one, keep my mouth shut, except to like your closest friends, and be careful what kind of friends you have on top of that, you know, with what you let them know. I would say another thing is don't try to cheat your taxes with this. This is not the tool for that. Even using, like I said, I use Monero. They can't tell anything about a Monero. That's a shit coin, but it's actually one with utility. It is a very private transaction. I am pro privacy, but where'd you get it? Probably on an exchange. And if you're going to take it back into some other form, how'd you get it back into another form? So somewhere there's an exchange account that you're attached to with those two sides of the transaction. And who'd you send it to? How's their security, right? How's their, when people think that they can use this to be completely anonymous, you know, Ross Ulbricht isn't doing like double life plus 20 and all the transactions there were in Bitcoin. So don't think it makes you invisible or it's tax exempt or something. Now, if you're in some countries other than the United States where they believe in more economic freedom than we have, a lot of Bitcoin and crypto as a whole are treated as currencies. So there is no tax implications. That's not us. Go slow when you begin, and don't try this bullshit that you think you know when to buy. The way you describe buying is almost perfect. Bought a little bit here, a little bit there when it dips. I believe in DCA, dollar cost average. So you buy a fixed amount every month or every week. And on some of these services, you know, like Strike or what is it? Not Zelle, it's Block or some. I don't know. It's kind of like PayPal. It's like a competitor. You can buy like a dollar at a time, and you just have to buy like a dollar an hour if you want to, right?
Oh,
and
right.
So, I mean, or a week or whatever. So do something like that, but then do on top of it what you said. I call it modified DCA. If you have some extra capital, keep some extra cash in your exchange account. And when you get that big dip, throw some extra money at it, but keep that recurring cycle. We've done study after study, informal, people putting together models, and people timing the market versus people just DCAing. DCAing almost always wins. Unless if you're a genius and you hit the exact tops and bottoms, sure. But you know who does that? Nobody.
Nobody.
Don't get sucked into leverage. Like these accounts will offer you equivalent of like margin on stocks where you're borrowing money. No. If you have to ask me a question at all, you're not ready to do that. I don't do that, and I know better. And all the yield farming shit and all, stay away from it. Just don't. Don't make this hard. The problem we have with Bitcoin, and it's why there's so much, frankly, bullshit in the Bitcoin space and even more in the whole crypto space, right, is that the formula is simple. And that means there's only so much to talk about. And people that talk every day want something to say, right? So the formula is buy Bitcoin, hold it, and don't spend it. That's it. And when you see these people on Noster and Twitter or X or whatever, and they're like, you need to spend your Bitcoin. Bitch, don't worry about somebody else spending their money, any kind of money. America does not have an insufficient spending problem of anything, right?
True.
We spend too much of it. This is for holding and saving long term. If you need some of it and you have to go get it, that's part of savings too. Like I said, if you want to spend it, the best way I know to spend Bitcoin is you spend dollars and the other party gets Bitcoin. I'm all about that. That's why I love Strike. I use Strike almost exclusively for that. And when you fill out the form and they use Plaid to check your bank account, your identity, if it works, it's flawless and you won't need customer service. If it doesn't work, the problem is they don't care.
Gotcha. Well, that helps a lot, Jack. I feel like that I am definitely not an expert, but I feel like I'm not a complete nutter BTC moron now. So I feel like I've got a broader understanding of kind of the basics, and that's very helpful. And I hope this video helped a few other folks as well. Any final parting words?
What made you, Ken Berry, decide to buy some Bitcoin? Because there's so many people, especially in our age bracket, that are really resistant to this. What made you say, hey, you know, this is worth a few bucks? Because that's my goal in life, is as an evangelist, to get people onboarded. I figure once you get onboarded, it'll work out.
Well, my story is a bit complicated because I've always been a libertarian. I read Rothbard 2 decades ago, Hayek, Rand. Like I've always been libertarian, freedom, liberty, objectivism, and so it just fits for me. But then, even so, you know, it's new. It's something new. It's like, I don't know. Is this bullshit? Is this, I mean, is this the NSA? They're just punking us, yeah. You know, who knows? And so I just kept researching it and studying it. And the thing that really got me was the 2019 to 2023 rate of inflation, because, you know, inflation's always, well, they say it's around 2 to 3%, but you and I both know that they keep changing the way they calculate inflation. And if you look at John Williams, he'll tell you the way they used to calculate inflation. And if you use that same method today, then inflation's in the teens. It's in the 15% range. Mm-hmm. And so Michael Saylor said, you know, the cost of money is 12%. And so you've got to make a 20% profit to even make a profit. If you start a business and you're like, oh yeah, we made, you know, 10% profit this year, you lost 2%.
You literally 2%.
Went in the hole. Yeah,
you
went in the hole.
And so, worked. You work hard and you risk capital to lose 2% and you think you did good.
Yeah, exactly. And so that I already kind of have this basic understanding of economics. So I'm like, yeah, this is dumb. I mean, obviously Bitcoin is probably not perfect, but it's probably the closest thing to perfection that we currently have.
I would agree. And we did have one question here. People said, did Jack explain why it's Bitcoin and it's not crypto? And, you know, I try to be gentle on this subject because I shit coined for a long time. That workshop you came to, I was talking about shit like Algorand and stuff. Not really as a monetary instrument, but as a blockchain to secure things like NFTs for things I still think could work, but nobody's really interested in doing them, like titles on cars or shares in a production. And I think there's a place for that at some point. But for money, it's Bitcoin, because what you said about Gresham's Law is everything. If there was still an economy that took silver coinage, nobody would take anything past the 1965 quarter or a dime because I want silver, right? And what that tells us, there's only one number one. The second is last. So it was a Ricky Bobby, right? If you ain't first, you're last. Well, there's only one first, and it's Bitcoin. And you hear terms like the flippening, and I've heard that stupid shit for 10 years now. And you know what's flipped? The people that bought into it over to being what we call a Bitcoin maxi. And so I don't hate the term crypto. I don't beat people up who are – we weren't all born – about the only person I know that's really well known that came into this space and went straight to Bitcoin maxi and stayed there is Michael Saylor. He's the only one, and I think it's because he came at this with like a complete concept of like finance and the same problem you had, inflation. And so when you come at it that way, you're like, well, I want the best, and then the rest of it's shit. Like, he's not out to gamble. Like, yeah, sure, Elon might say some shit about Doge again, and it might go to the moon for 5 minutes or something, but it's not going to last. It's not going to be a long-term tool. And I think the biggest indicator of that, and this is what killed any hope I had for anything but Bitcoin, when you were asking about Lightning, once we started building on Lightning, then we started building things like Nostr, then we started building podcast platforms like Fountain, where people are literally listening to you podcast and sending you like one sat a minute while they listen to you, which you can't do with anything else. And so when people start telling me about their shitcoin, what I always say is, who's building what on top of your shitcoin? This is the beauty of Bitcoin. It is a network that has the capacity to replace MasterCard and Visa, but the most important part of it is it's permissionless. If I want to integrate MasterCard into my app, I have to go beg somebody, some gatekeeper, like Stripe or PayPal or somebody, right, to give me a merchant account that they monitor and charge me fees for. And if they say no, I can't do it. Anybody, anywhere can build anything on top of Bitcoin. And that makes every use case that you come up with for all this other stuff pointless. Because the fact that I have the most secure network humans have ever built and the most successful thing measured in dollars that humans have ever built in a decade in one place means that nothing else will take that position. Because this is what I've said about smartphones. You're going to pick this phone up in less than 10 years. And if there's an app on there that could be monetized, it will be, or it won't be on your phone anymore. Do you use traffic apps, Ken? Like Waze or something like that when you're driving?
Yeah, we use some kind of map thing.
Okay. So Waze, like, especially when I'm going long, like I'm going to go up to Tennessee next month for Nicole Sauce's thing. So you're hauling ass on the highway for 8-9 hours in a row. You're probably going to bend a few speed limits. Well, Waze has users will say, there's a cop here, and you're driving along, and on your screen comes up a little whoopee light, and you, when you go by, you say, confirmed, he's still there. And now I'm not. So last time I drove up there, I went 3 times I got that warning, and one time we got around a really bad backup because of it. So that's 4 times my life wasn't inconvenienced because somebody ratted out a cop or somebody reported an accident. Why can't we have that app where I go, gee, Ken Berry told me about that cop. Here's a dollar. Because when I pay you a dollar to save me an encounter with law enforcement, you bet your ass I will. And so I think every one of these apps is going to have that integration
100%.
Into it. Not only is it good, just like, but the network effect. If you have 2 traffic apps, Ken, and one will pay you and one won't, you're going to use the one that pays you. The app that gets more people to use it has a greater network effect and therefore is becomes the de facto. So if you're going to ignore this as an app developer, unless you have something like a calculator app where nobody gives a shit, right? If there's any network effect to what you're doing, you're going to have to monetize it. And the only way to do it is Lightning or some of the other stuff that we won't get into. There's other liquid and Fediments and stuff like that. You got anything else for me, bro? Oh, he's gone quiet. What's happened to him? We don't hear you, Ken.
Okay, there we go.
There you go. He muted himself. Okay. All right, there you go. Go ahead.
I think this is inevitable. I think it is the future. And I think Bitcoin is the best. And like you and Saylor say, if it's the best, then there is nothing else. Why would you want anything else? And so I'm in the process of converting what little Ethereum I have over to Bitcoin, and I'm going to be getting a private custody wallet that I can, once I get a significant amount of Bitcoin, then I can move it to the keys to that wallet and keep that safe and just keep stacking.
I would tell you that is good advice. And again, it's the concept that don't make what's simple hard to feel smart. Like, you can listen to me and I'll throw a bunch of words out and you might have to look a few of them up. But in the end, all I really do is buy Bitcoin every month. And when I get enough of it where it makes sense to do a transaction, move it to cold storage. And when somebody pays me in Bitcoin, I keep it. And when somebody wants me to pay in Bitcoin, I'm going to use, like I said, like an app like Strike where I'm sending USD and it's delivered as Bitcoin. That's the entire formula. The reason I talk about it is because I realize that if people don't understand it, they won't trust it. So we get deep into it so that people can have whatever amount of understanding you need to enact that simple formula will do, because I really believe that we are heading for economically and logistically some very, very hard times. I don't want to get political right now at the end or anything, but we know what's going on in the world. And, you know, things will probably be worse if Trump doesn't get elected than if he does, but they're not going to be all hunky-dory because he does. And it will be done in 4 years. He's not going to stay there forever. He's not going to be a dictator for life or some shit. And sooner or later, we're going to deal with the consequences of the amount of money printing we've done. We have a $35 trillion debt right now. We pay more money right now in interest on the debt than we pay the Department of Defense, the entire Department of Defense. In another year or two, we will be spending more money on interest on the debt than the entire Social Security budget.
Yep.
It'll probably be a decade before it will exceed the Department of Defense and Social Security put together if it's not bankrupt. And so you need a plan B.
Yes.
This is the best plan B as it is for the most people. There's probably other plan Bs that are better for some people. You're probably not one of them. If you're a billionaire with six passports, and you have a fortune in gold stored in seven different countries and a Learjet to take you there, you can I still wouldn't do it, but you could probably ignore this. Other people, you're going to work at some point. There will be a crisis that will cause an exodus from the dollar. And whatever they do to reboot it, it's either going to murder you or make you wealthy. It's your choice.
Yep. Yep. No, I see it coming. I think you're exactly right. Thanks for doing this, Jack. I feel almost intelligent now.
Well, get yourself a good software wallet, get that money off Coinbase, and don't worry about Lightning other than for the little stuff. And I would tell you, set up a Strike account and probably set up a Swan account. And at you're a big highfalutin influencer with like 2.5 million followers. You should talk to Swan about Swan Private, where they will walk you through everything and take care of you. I'm not important enough for that, but they roll out the red carpet for you.
I doubt that, but we'll see. All right. Thank you very much, Jack. I appreciate the info.
Thanks, man. All right, guys, real quick. I enjoyed doing that. I like being on the other end of an interview once in a while. Ken's a great dude. I tease him from time to time, but he really is a good guy. And he's always been a good friend of the show and the community. And what we did just there was no shtick in that, right? That was 100% genuine. He really has been asking me a lot of questions about Bitcoin again over text, and it's hard to answer. And so I just thought it would be beneficial for y'all to hear me actually walk through Bitcoin with somebody who knew a little bit about it, but not everything they wanted to. Doing that, it makes me wonder if it would be good to do an episode someday where I take somebody who's open to Bitcoin but doesn't understand it at all. You know, a real boomer situation, even if a person's 30 years old, where I just don't get it. I don't understand anything about it, but everybody's talking about it and I'd want to know more, and let that person come on and ask me about it. Now, I would like that person to not try to be, well, I wouldn't take Sean out of the audience here, who's always here to tell us the power is going to go out and we're trusting our money to a light switch. And, you know, most of these people are like, well, if the power goes off, well, you'll probably die. Just to be honest, like the people that ask that question are never the ones that are really prepared, but somebody that like genuinely is curious, but not sold. You know, what is it backed by? All those questions I've answered before, but I think that doing it in an interactive environment is much more beneficial, because there are times like, well, I answered that question 8 times. But the person out there that's like we're talking about is like, I still don't know what you said. And the beauty of having someone on the other end of that conversation is then go, wait a minute, this is the one part. You said this word, I don't know what it means. Or you said this thing, and I don't understand how that relates to the last thing you said. And I think that's a lot more productive. If you think you are that person, I'm not going to say fill out the guest form, because this is a different kind of show, right? Email me, jack@thesurvivalpodcast.com. Put TSPC in the subject line and tell me about yourself. And if you'd like to do this, because I think this would be a fun interview to do. And, you know, I would even say that if we did it right, we could take a person who wants to get Bitcoin into their life and start from zero. And by the time we're done with the episode, they would own their first Bitcoin. Now, there'd have to be some pre-show work, because you're going to have to get Strike or Swan or something, right? You're going to have an account somewhere set up and some money in it. Like, that's something that would have to happen before the interview, because there's an approval process and what have you. But I think that would be kind of fun. And look, or, you know, you at least got that far. Let's go ahead and get you transferred to your wallet. like your first software wallet. Yeah, I think when people see something happen, and we can only show so much because we don't want anybody to know any personal information, but I think there's something amazing about it. And I think another thing that would be cool would be to like have someone at least have set up the person that does this, maybe at least set up your Lightning wallet or set up a Nostr account and don't tell anybody. And let me send you a couple thousand sats right in the middle of the show. And let's see your face when that light goes on because that green check mark comes. And we're sitting here looking at each other in real time. And I go, boop, and bam. And you got 50 cents for me with no one in the middle, with no one telling you whether or not you had permission to do it or not. I think that would be really interesting. Tom has a great idea here. That might be another way we could do it. We could do it as a live stream video. Well, no, we would do it as a recorded video only. And then after the fact, any kind of personal information I could black out. But I think we could pull it off live. I think that'd be more fun to do. But that's not a bad idea. We'll think about it depending on who emails me. But I think that would be fun. And I've seen other people do it, and it's just something I've never done. But I think that the better you understand this, the more you're going to understand why so many of us are so dedicated to it. I get emails all the time. Bitcoin crashed. It went down $5,000. Yeah, and so I don't care. Man, I rode this thing from at one point like $26,000 down to like $3,000 and just held it and then rode it up to like 24 and then down to like 7 and then rode it up to like what was the last cycle, like 67,000 and then down to like 14 and I didn't blink. You think I give a shit that it went from 60 back to the 58K gang? You think I care about $2,000 of? No, I don't care. Why? Because the longer you're in this, the less you'll care about that, because the less you're thinking about tomorrow. This is about time preference, folks. What is your time preference? We have lived in a fiat world for so freaking long. Our time preference is about, like, you can show the average American's time preference with your thumb and pointer finger on the same hand. It's so short. We measure performance of salespeople by the week instead of annually, right? And we should measure salespeople annually. I'm just saying, like, unless there's a real problem, right? But we measure our own world in like this little, like, whatever. If you get paid every 2 weeks, you measure your time preference in 2 weeks. If you get paid every week, you measure your time preference in 1 week. If you get paid monthly, you measure it in 30 days. And we shouldn't be doing that. I'm stacking money for partly for my retirement, but more for my great-grandchildren to have someday. You think I give a fuck what happens over 2 weeks? No, because I know what the long-term trend is. But you don't get to that level of confidence with something that's brand new to humanity. I mean, it's what, 2008 is when it came out. It's about as old as the show, about 16 years old as an idea. So that's brand new for a technology. You think about, like, even digital cameras are new. Fucking Kodak had the first digital camera in, like, 1974 to drive home how early we are. So this is new to people. So how do you get to where that crucible is like a sauna and then I jump in the pool and I don't, like, I feel good now? You make it through two cycles. You make it through two cycles. You got to go through your virgin cycle. There's a four-year cycle because it's going to go up and it's going to come back down. That first one hurts. The second one hurts not as much. By the time that second one's over, you will not care. You will become a crypto honey badger, a Bitcoin honey badger. You don't give a shit what the market does. Ollie made one mistake in all this, and that is not becoming a Michael Saylor back in 2013 when I entered the space. I found out about Bitcoin. I bought some Bitcoin. Then Coinbase, all they had was Bitcoin back then. Then they brought in Ethereum. I never heard of it, didn't know what it was. Like I said, if you can, it was 98 cents. I'll buy some of that, you know, $100 worth. Fuck it. Made a bunch of money. Oh, shit. Look, I'm a genius. Started buying all this garbage. If all I had ever done, buy and hold Bitcoin, I would probably be doing this podcast still, but I'd be like, this is Jack Spirko coming to you from Jackistan. Like, really, that's where I would be with this. I've done well. I would have done better not trying to outsmart the market. The market knows what it's doing. So anyway, real quick before I go, let me remind you, one of the ways you can help the show out and the work that we do is you do your online shopping at tspaz.com. If you do that, you'll help us out no matter what you buy. This week, what I've got for you are the Vivor rechargeable LED headlamp flashlights. These things are just freaking awesome. They work just great. They're bright as crap. Now my eyes are all jacked up because I went and blinked myself with them. But these are great. And they have two different light styles, the LED bar and a spotlight, and then two different levels. Plus, they do some other features. Super lightweight, fit in a cargo pocket. No problem. You'll forget that it's there. And they're $16. Great deal, right? It's $16 for two of them. $16 for two of them. So consider picking some of these up. Remember, anything Vivor sells, you can buy through my primary links at tspaz.com. Use the discount code that's there as well and get 5% off anything, no matter if it's on sale. Stack it with other offers, anything that you want to do. With that, I'll wrap up today. We'll remind you real quick, we do have cover crop and soil course now available. Lots of you guys are taking it, and really appreciate your business there. You can find that at homefoodsystems.com. I got one of the best comments or compliments, however you want to call it, because of the person it came from last night. Billy Bond, who many of you know, is the Permaculture Pimp podcast and Permapastures Farm. Dude is smart. I've known Billy for a long time. Turns out I've known him since I was in the Army. We drank beer together when we were both in the Army back in the 90s. Just didn't remember it when we met again. And I have tremendous respect for him. And we gave him a free copy of the course because he's an influencer. He texted me last night. And let me actually read that comment because this really meant a lot to me. He said, I'm not sure how you did it, but in chapter one, you covered the most important segments of the presentations of both Darren Daughtry and John Kemp at the last Stockman Grass Farmers conference a couple weeks ago. I'm tied up for the next few weeks, but do you want to come on and pimp the Pimpcast and pimp this thing out? And I told him I would absolutely do that. And we had some more. But to have Billy like excited because he took the first chapter, that's a big deal. That really is. And we've gotten some other really great feedback from people on it already, and we just started selling it. So if you want to know how to really amp up your food production at home, check it out again, homefoodsystems.com. Hope you enjoyed the content and my conversation with Ken today. We do tease each other a little bit because we love each other like brothers. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with an expert counsel show, Friday flashback, and then we'll do it all again next week.
You should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way. Revolution.